Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A strangely truncated week comes to its end. This is the 27th day of December 2013. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you will find, first and foremost, access to the chat room, which is beginning to fill up even as I speak. Good evening, Sparky and Sergi and Tim and Todd and Waggy. And well, Kathy was there, but now Kathy's gone again. There's Kathy's back. Hey, Kathy. All right. And more to come, even... We can't all be as prompt as those guys are. You'll also find it HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the listen live stream. Of course, if you're not listening on something that runs Windows Media Player, you're also free to choose from a couple of pretty good apps, you know, when they're not running ExxonMobil ads or something equally odious. And by that, I mean TuneIn Radio or Stitcher Internet Radio, both of which will do a good job of bringing the program to you. They're also handy on your smart devices, your iThis or Android that. You'll also find the PayPal button. That's how we keep this all the plates spinning in the air, as it were, here. We try to raise about $150 a night, and if we could do that tonight, it would be excellent. Took Christmas and the following day, known to much of the rest of the world as Boxing Day, but known to us here as Ferg's birthday, off. You know, when your birthday's either Christmas or the day before or the day after, you're kind of getting stiffed all life long. So he wanted to take the night off and run around and do some stuff, and that we did. And he had a happy birthday. Now, Ferg, it should be noted, the first thing he did that marked his 18th birthday was to go out and sign up for the Selective Service, otherwise known as the draft. I remember, 50 minus 10, 32 years ago, doing the same thing on my birthday. And writing on the card, under protest. My son did the same thing, under protest. And so he was asking me some questions as we were driving on down the road, and he said, "So, like, everybody who turns 18 has to go do this?" And I said, "No." He said, "Who doesn't?" I said, "Girls." He said, "What the... Dad?" He said, "I thought we were supposed to not be sexist and stuff and getting away from that." I said, "Well, that's where sexism still resides." And I said, "Make no mistake, son, in the 21st century, what they mean by signing up for the draft is that if they ever have to call people up, it'll be you. And a lot of other people your age, and it will be for purposes of going and fighting over natural resources." Really, the days of fighting over political ideology are pretty well past, wouldn't you say? Ever since, well, golly, when? We've been fighting, come on, Vietnam was not about political ideology, please, there was money to be made. And there was money to be made. I guess the last political ideology, what, the Iran-Contra, the nasty little filthy right-wing war in Central America, El Salvador and Nicaragua, and some of the more covert nastiness that went on in Honduras and Guatemala. Okay, maybe that was ideological, but starting with Bush War I and continuing through to the present day, it's all resource wars. Right? So, no, my son did not go to register to serve his country in times of need, need-driven conscription. My son went to sign up to, if need be, fight a war for some godforsaken oil company. And I do mean godforsaken. So he's got, you know, he's on the clock, as it were, until 7 years from yesterday. And who knows, maybe even after that. And yes, in 2013, although it was difficult for him to comprehend, the girls get a pass. How do I feel about that? I'd like to see the whole selective service system simply dismantled. It's anachronistic. It's bullshit. It's anti-democratic. Because, see, I imagine, who knows, maybe yesterday some son of the 1% turned 18, too, and went and signed up. But anybody who thinks that if a draft ever came along that a son of the 1% would go and mine would not, should probably put down the pipe. Because we fight their wars, not vice versa. But we did. We had a lovely birthday. And of course, I was gone on Christmas too, as to be expected. And it should probably be noted that we had a lovely Christmas, and it was lovely for its simplicity. It was almost what you would call minimalist. Not much more. Not much more than a meal and close, immediate family. And I have not had a lovelier Christmas in a very long time. It was charming. For those of you who celebrated, I hope yours was as well. Isaac asking, with regard to registering for the draft, did you know he could have done it online, Bob? No, I didn't. And I don't think it has the same visceral quality as going down to the post office and doing it does. Interestingly, they weren't, just to point this out, it is far more difficult to register to vote than it is to register to be fed into Uncle Sam's lubricated meat grinder. Right. Jan from Vegas pointing out it was a rite of passage. Yes. I wanted him to be fully aware of what his country expected of him. And then we found out, of course, that his papers were not in order for registering to vote. So we'll get that taken care of probably early next week. But it's a sobering thing. Our buddy Tom from the Bay Area sent me a tweet saying that he shared my disquietude. Actually, he said, my gut wrenches for you. I did that with my boy 3 years ago. So sad and helpless. And if it's anything more than filling out names on a piece of paper, if you actually stop to think about what you are doing with your son's life in that moment, sad and helpless does pretty well describe the feeling. Because if it ever comes again, it's a poverty draft. There's already a poverty draft, you see. Of course you see. You know. You know that we feed our military out of the most poor, the most beaten down areas of our country, whether it be inner city neighborhoods or rural slices of hell where there is no work. So it would just be a poverty draft on top of a poverty draft and not a damn thing you can do about it. But they do make very clear to you, by God, best do this, or there's a $250,000 fine and God knows how long in the federal stir for not. Of course, including not being able to apply for student financial aid and things like that. But it's brutal. Oh, and by the way, and I'm sure some POS Republican had something to do with this somewhere. You would think that when you go down to the post office and fill out the little card at the post office and hand it to you would think that it would have that little square box that said no postage necessary if mailed within the United States. But oh no. Oh no. It cost me 46 cents to potentially throw away the life of my 18-year-old son. Bastards. So, you get, yeah. So, I guess this will, you know, arrive in the mail and you get it. Do you even get a card anymore? I don't know. Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Tim from L.A. The gay card doesn't even work anymore. So I guess you got nothing left but the Ted Nugent defense of, if it ever comes around, going for about 2 weeks of evacuating your bowels and your bladder upon yourself and then going in and saying, I'm ready to go, just like Ted did, military hero Ted Nugent. No, I guess, that's too much. But seriously, if you have any input on this, I welcome it. If we're going to have selective service, is it time that women be included? Women 18 to 25? Are we progressive and are we liberal? Or do we think that, no. I mean, there's just some things we don't want to do. I don't know. You know, my default position is I don't want anybody in the draft. So just, you know, some thoughts upon a milestone. Now, of course, the same thing still obtains. He's 18 years old, and he can't drink a beer legally. And in states that have, well, I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff he can't do. But he can, by God, be called up to be thrown into some probably right-wing misadventure, God knows where, if it ever gets bad enough. Yeah, good point from Sandra. Selective service registration for women? Maybe when rape has ended. Yeah, see, I think the smart money would just be on eliminating the whole. How much does it cost to administer this dumbass system, anyway? Isn't it funny you hear right wingers all over federal government, big government, blah, 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 but they never say anything about the big government selective service system. Ever. But you can bet it costs something to maintain. Of course, we've probably got private contractors. Maybe Booz Allen and Hamilton are administering the selective service system. Who knows? Wouldn't surprise me in the least, would it, you? Blackwater, Z, whatever they're calling themselves. Yeah, some godforsaken front feet in the trough trying to get the back trotters in with them, contractor outfit. I didn't know that, Tim. He could legally buy medicinal marijuana in California at 18. I had no idea. But, yeah, he gets to register to vote. But, like I said, they didn't, you know, they're with the Selective Service. They didn't want his, no ID, no passport, no birth certificate, no proof of residency, no nothing. Just sign up. Voting, on the other hand, larger, different kettle of fish. For that, we're taking the passport, the birth certificate. Because voter fraud. Yeah, I know. He could have registered online, but I wanted him to have that visceral, physical experience of going somewhere with a particular purpose to do a specific thing that is deeply objectionable. What do you say we let the 1%'s children fight the next war? Now, me, I'm opposed to the idea of a next war. But still, what do you say we let John Boehner's family fight it? What do you say we let Mitch McConnell's family fight it? What do you say we let the Koch boys, the next generation, go and fight it? How about the Walton heirs? Could they do it? Among all them cowards, we probably couldn't come up with enough people to make up a half decent squad, let alone a platoon. Yeah. Because, you know, they're above all that. That's for the, you know, that war fighting business, that's for the proles to do, isn't it? Hell, I'm probably more frustrated and pissed off about this than Ferg is. Wouldn't be surprising. The other thing I did to mark his birthday, I played him Alice Cooper's 18. So, well, when that time comes, Tim says, Contact Lottie. He's an ordained priest, and Lottie can make Ferg a conscientious objector. All you need is a note by an ordained minister, or hell, have him sign up with the Universalist Unitarian Church so that he can be a conscientious objector there. Darlene, getting in the spirit of things, suggesting, or maybe let Lindsey Graham's family fight the next war. Oh, that's right, he doesn't even have a family. Not a real one, at any rate. Huckleberry. Yeah, Texas T in the chat room gets to the heart of the problem. Bob, as long as they starve the rest of us to volunteer for military service, none of their rich asses are going anywhere. And that's the truth. So just, you know, just a little day in the life here after 2 days away. Lovely days, too. Bright, sunshiny, pleasant. I think we got up to 50 degrees today. Although I saw somewhere that this is the darkest night of the year. I don't know, maybe new moon and or something. I didn't have time. But that's basically the past 2 days. In terms of scheduling for the program, we will be having, you know, we've got Friday on the front porch tonight, and then Tuesday night, New Year's Eve, we will have the great big whopping Skype-a-palooza New Year's Eve. And that should be a lot of fun. There will probably be a day away from the, or an evening away. I don't know, not for sure. I guess we'll just play it by ear. I might miss a day sometime next week that isn't New Year's Day. Just don't know. Watch this space, as the old saying goes. So, where to go with this Friday on the front porch? A few things. Here, this is funny. You remember when we had the story about McDonald's suggesting tip amounts for what their minimum wage workers should give at the holidays to their nanny or their pool cleaner? Well, the website where those suggestions came from is no more. The clown has shut down its McResource program. And this was, and of course, nothing that was on there was ever blamed. McDonald's accepted blame for none of it. Say, well, you know, this is something we came up with an outside vendor. A third-party contractor. So the website's just going away. Because the latest thing that got discovered, the fry that broke the camel's back, I guess, is the advice that McDonald's was offering its workers, essentially about how bad it is to eat McDonald's food. With a photo accompanied by a photograph that shows something that decidedly looks like McDonald's fries, a Big Mac, and a big old soda pop set over against a glass of water, a green salad, and a sub sandwich that might or might not be from Blimpies or Subways. The caption reads, "Although not impossible, it is more of a challenge to eat healthy when going to a fast food place. In general, avoiding items that are deep-fried are your best bet. Healthier choices include sandwiches that can be loaded with vegetables. Limit the extras such as cheese, bacon, and mayonnaise. Eat at places that offer a variety of salads, soups, and vegetables to help maintain your best health." It turns out that a Big Mac delivers in one really awful, awful, awful piece of pseudo food. The Big Mac has about 50% of what is the recommended daily allotment of fat, which is probably a bit over the top in the first place. Also at the McResource, "While convenient and economical for a busy lifestyle, fast foods are typically high in calories, fat, saturated fat, sugar, and salt, and may put people at risk for becoming overweight." Yeah, really. Among other things, the McResource line told McDonald's workers that they could sell off their Christmas presents for extra money, and told them that they could go and live on food stamps. The average hourly wage at McDonald's is somewhere around $7.81. So when that got outed, well, that was the end of the McResource line. But we are, after all, talking about an American corporation where personal responsibility is something that is for other people to engage in, not for McDonald's Corporation. So, here with 2013 coming to its sad and sorry end, we will be bidding a fond farewell, not fond, and not farewell. Just be gone to the McResource webpage. And McDonald's Corporation, in a sort of we can't have anything nice sort of pissy little complaint, said, between links to irrelevant or outdated information, along with outside groups taking elements out of context, this created unwarranted scrutiny and inappropriate commentary. Unwarranted scrutiny. Is that just an American corporation, corporate attitude in a nutshell? How dare you look at how we treat our people? They are our people. And if we want to tell them how to tip the nanny and the pool boy, then by God we will. How dare you unwarrantedly scrutinize us doing that? We're a corporate person. We've got religious feelings now. Leave us alone. Leave Britney alone. And the straw that broke the fry that broke the camel's back was telling McDonald's workers that eating McDonald's food is probably poisonous. Yes, Fritz, absolutely. Tweet from Fritz in Arkansas. McResource equals McFail. But I love that idea that somehow McDonald's is not deserving of scrutiny. Is not therefore deserving of people taking a hard look at what they're doing when they go to McDonald's. Because when you go to McDonald's, you are supporting a system that is almost entirely exploitative. It's exploitative in the fields where the vegetables are grown. God knows it's exploitative at the contained animal feed operations, where the cattle live in their own feces up to their knees, such as cattle have knees. That's a knee. They got a knee, don't they? Where when they die, they're picked up with a forklift and dumped into the Soylent Green machine. You don't even want to think. Well, pink slime, McNuggets, done. Okay. And then there's the people who work there at McDonald's. $7.81 an hour, McDonald's admits that its own workers cannot live on the wages it pays and therefore should probably sell off their Christmas gifts. When there probably aren't much in the way of Christmas gifts in the first place because they're busting their ass to provide Christmas gifts to their children. When you go, you know, when there's a cost. And it's worth reminding ourselves of once in a while. When you go through a fast food drive-thru or walk up to the counter, you are participating in an oppressive process that is based upon stealing essential human worth from low-wage workers and transferring the wealth that they generate into the pockets of people who couldn't possibly ever spend it all. I'm sure the Christmas, the year-end Christmas bonuses at McDonald's were lovely. I'm equally sure that they did not translate down. Fry Guy does not get a $500,000 bonus. Now, it turns out, if a McDonald's worker finds herself in that conundrum of not knowing, say, roughly this time next year, of not knowing how much to tip the pool boy or the the pool guy, I'm sorry, not knowing how much to tip the pool cleaning guy or how much to tip the au pair, there will be an internal telephone line where the McDonald's worker can call and get that information. But it's not going to be out there for organizations like the Low Pay Is Not Okay campaign to go and look at it and engage in what they call it? Oh, yes, unwarranted scrutiny and inappropriate commentary. Wonder how long it'll take for somebody to rat out the phone number of the resource line. Well, give us your employee ID number, please. No, I'm sorry, without the employee ID number, we cannot tell you how much to tip the au pair. Note coming in from Kevin in Colorado Springs. Subject line, my suggestion for the draft is this. Based on your family income, the last year the draftee was a minor. The higher the income bracket, the higher the draftee is in the draft. So Mittens Romney, his kids would go first in the draft, while your kids would be in the lower areas of the draft. If there's a draft, this is the fairest way I know how it should be done, Kevin says. Oh, one rule to this draft, no deferments for anything at all. If you're wealthy and you're drafted, then you go, no exceptions. What? Can you imagine what this world would have been if say, five death the Richard B. Dick, big time before he dicked you, Cheney, had to go to the jungles of Vietnam and got his ass shot off and killed? What would have become of this world if there had been no Dick Cheney? Oh, wait. I think we just found another compelling argument for Kevin's suggestion. Jack in Shreveport with an observation. McDonald's. The McResource page you were talking about made me think Mac Grease Source, which probably applies. Oh, I'm sure it does. I wonder if a self-respecting grease car diesel modification vehicle would run on that stuff. So we won't have McDonald's to kick around anymore in the new year. And by the way, now, this being the 27th of December and everything, happy Kwanzaa. And I say that with great sincerity. Happy Kwanzaa. Oddly enough, right-wingers who are, I don't know what, pigmentally challenged, and somehow or another it causes their brains not to understand why Kwanzaa would be important. That skeletal looking blonde lady that keeps popping up posted the following, alleging that it should be set to the tune of Jingle Bells. Kwanzaa bells, dashikis sell, whitey has to pay, burning, shooting, oh what fun, on this made-up holiday. My, isn't she funny? No, she isn't.
And, you know, they just get away with it.
Oh, wait, her? Oh, yeah, sure, she's a racist. I mean, she's a right-winger. She's a Republican. She's supposed to be. Let it go. Or then there's... yet another sidelight. I was thinking earlier today, because the phony baloney ginned up, made up, frauded up, rubed up, suckered up, this way to the egress duck doofus controversy will not go away. Usually these things have a you know, they've got the staying power of maybe, you know, a week. This may turn out to be the best orchestrated non-troversy in the history of ginned-up media non-troversies. It all started, like I said, a couple of months ago when they ginned one up that said, the liberals are trying to make the Robertsons quit praying at the end of their show, and Cy Dunn said, if we can't pray, we won't do it no more. But it didn't get quite the legs that it needed. So that's when they decided to move it up to sweat condition alpha, and Phil went out and ginned himself up some free publicity. It is all 100% pure grade A restaurant quality hooey. But now they've gone beyond. Found this over at Americans Against the Tea Party. I like that place. Now they have gone beyond simply defending the words that Duck Doofus said, and now they're defending the words he didn't say, but they're attributing to him. And as much as I hate to admit that my brain cells were involved in such an undertaking, I was actually contemplating Duck Doofus earlier today, and I realized, this dumb bastard looks like John Brown without the redeeming social values. I mean, I could almost swear that he probably posed for that first Kansas album cover. Oh, Jesus, Bob, you're old. You remember the first Kansas? And you don't even have good taste. Kansas album? Really? Saw him in concert, too. Let's just complete the trifecta. That was the night that the seed exploded and burned a hole through my shirt. A little tough to explain. But no, he looks like John Brown. Only with all the wrong ideas. Not to say that John Brown had the right ideas with violence, but at least he was on the right side of the issue. So now the following is being attributed to Duck Doofus. Our culture has accepted two huge lies. The first is that if you disagree with someone's lifestyle, you must fear or hate them. The second is that to love someone means you agree with everything they believe or do. Both are nonsense. You don't have to compromise convictions to be compassionate. Well, as Howard Crane points out over at Americans Against the Tea Party, those words do not belong to Duck Doofus. They belong to that guy who President Obama had pray at his first inaugural, Rick Warren, the homophobe. But what Mr. Crane points out, and is even funnier, is the fact that when they were called about the fact that they were putting out words that weren't Duck Doofus's, they defended it and said, who cares if Phil said it? It still applies. Jesus. Maybe that'll be the only reference to Duck Doofus tonight. It would be fine by me. Oh, that's good, Todd. That's very good. Ducks in the Wind. Yes, indeed. Although that was from the Point of No Return album. I think Miracles Out of Nowhere was it. There wasn't much to remember about the first Kansas album. And, you know, he's been unsuspended and after an orgy of Duck Dufy, they will be back on your TV with live Jesus Loving episodes real soon. Mm-hmm. A&E released a statement earlier today saying that Phil's indefinite suspension had been lifted. That must mean they're about to go back into production and they need to get the rubes all good and ginned up. Phil, brother. What else? Oh, lots. You know, we talk a lot here about the for-profit media and about the fact that there's just, sometimes it just seems like they're too coincidentally lined up with the powers that be in this country, the for-profit media. Hello, Associated Press. The Associated Press had themselves or have themselves a political editor. Oh, yeah, this from Jeremy in Vermont. Sad thing is, Bob, now people are trying to also whitewash all of what Duck Doofus said up to the point of spreading crap like he never said anything about black folks, which, of course, he most assuredly did. But anyway, no, Associated Press, political editor, Liz Sedati. Now, you got to think, having a gig like being political editor of the entire Associated Press, that'd be a pretty nice gig, wouldn't it? I mean, I figure if you're political editor, and I don't know, you out there, Dr. John? What would a human being make as the political editor of the Associated Press? Apparently not enough. Because Liz Sedati has served up her notice to the AP, and she's quitting the journalism gig, if she actually was ever involved in it. Where is she going? Spend more time with her family? Home in the country? River of beer flowing over her grandmother's paisley shawl? Oh, hell no! Liz Sedati is moving on up. She's going to be the U.S. head of communications for, wait for it, BP. Remember when the head of BP said he was sick of the whole Horizon disaster thing and he just wanted to get his life back? After he'd had 14 people killed on that platform. Wasn't it 14 people? And there are people still dying along the Gulf Coast, and the environment's wrecked, and you can't eat the shrimp, and F the oysters, and sorry about the crabs, and right. Yeah, the same BP that had a disaster plan for how you protect the penguins there in the Caribbean. Yeah, that BP. Obviously, they need some communications help. And I guess there's a bit of a sliding Star Trek kind of door into the PR industry if you've actually been in alleged for-profit media journalism for a while. Very, very long time ago, someone who was very dear to me, her father,
got tired of the ink stains and the late nights and the craziness of journalism and decided he would start himself a PR business, and he became very well known and very well off for it and remained a very decent human being, I might add. I don't know if it's the same thing if you agree that you're going to go and just give up your journalizing if you were ever doing it in the first place, as is the case with Liz Sedati, and I think that's an open question. And just take the better, higher-paying gig over to BP. What's that stand for? Big polluter? No, oh, wait, no, of course not. Staff memo circulated to the Associated Press a couple of weeks ago said, Liz has told us she's interested in taking on a new challenge and developing business skills after 15 years as a reporter and editor with the AP. Because her new employer is someone AP covers, she will no longer be involved in any reporting, editing, or news management for AP, effective immediately. Oh, yeah, that was his name, Tony Hayward. I want my life back. I would like my life back. Also said that the Deepwater Horizon spill was relatively tiny. Meanwhile, BP is still trying to, and maybe they would want a good PR person. BP is still trying to weasel out of its responsibilities to the people whose world and lives they poisoned. I wonder what those new skills are that you take on when you quit being the Associated Press political editor and instead go to become the head of U.S. communications for BP. What kind of new skills are involved? Wonder if any of those new skills involve actually being, corporately responsible person type individual corporate. No. No, of course not. Silly man. So another reminder here at 12 minutes before the hour, we will be moving to the Friday on the Front Porch portion of the program in fairly short order. And if you've never participated, any time is good. Friday on the Front Porch has just become an absolute delight. I look forward to it every week. I hope you do as well. And if you want to jump in, just look up on Skype Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. Send him a friend request, and he can make you part of the Skype group, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Or you can use, we got four of them you can use. There's actually more lines than that, but the system only allows four on. You can use the telephone lines, 304-658-3333. And we have a rockin', rarin', rousin' good time with Friday on the Front Porch, and that'll be coming up in about, about 11 minutes or so, at the top of the hour. Plenty of stuff to talk about. A teacher in Ohio, southern Ohio, why am I not surprised? A teacher in southern Ohio finds himself suspended this evening. A teacher at Fairfield Freshman School. The teacher is Gil Voigt, and Gil Voigt is a teacher of some long standing. He's been 13 years at the freshman school in Fairfield, Ohio. He pulls down something on the order of $73,000 and $73,566 a year. And he was talking to students and said to a young man of dark complexion who was saying that he had ambitions toward being president of the United States someday, you know, if Barack Obama can do it right. Well, let's get things straight real quick. Mr. Voigt looked over at his young charge, the young scholar, and said, America does not need another black president. Now, to their credit, the Fairfield Freshman School, which is, is this thing a private school? I can't quite tell. No, because there's a school, well, I don't know, there's a school board. But at any rate, he was suspended without pay from the Fairfield Freshman School immediately this past Monday. He has 10 days in which to ask for a hearing before the school board or an arbitrator. Yeah, okay, it's a public school. Fairfield, Ohio Board of Education. And get this. Now, see if you can just make this work in your own mind. Because I'd love to figure out the context that goes with this. Mr. Gil Voigt of the Fairfield Freshman School of Fairfield, Ohio, is a science teacher. And I don't mean political science, civics, government, economics, history. He's not teaching English. He's a science teacher. So please explain to me, if you care to, what part of a science curriculum would include the teacher looking at a young student and saying, America does not need another black president. I mean, where does that fit on the periodic table of the elements? Where does that go, assuming that they actually teach science at the Fairfield Freshman School? Where does that go in a discussion of the innards of a frog? Where does that fit in learning about Boyle's gas laws? Or which is heavier, a pound of feathers or a pound of lead in physics class? And how do they fall? Where does America does not need another black president fit within the electrolysis of water? Or the distillation of wood? Because for the life of me, I can't find it. Let's see, Mr. Gil Voigt was verbally warned for making an inappropriate racial comment in 2008, this according to Cincinnati Inquirer. He also received a verbal warning in 2008 for improper use of school technology. Oh dear. Verbally warned for allegedly calling a student stupid and belittling him. Written warning last month for failure to use the adopted curriculum. And on December the 3rd, he looked at this young student and said, America does not need another black president. There were apparently about four witnesses to his statement on December the 3rd. The young man went home and told his parents. The response then was to remove the young man from Voight's class. The young Voight responded by saying, "My statement was misquoted. He's not a very good student, and he's troublesome in class." God damn, Mr. Voight, why don't you just go ahead and call him an outside agitator? Now, on the other hand, Dan Murray is the Fairfield City Schools Board President. And Dan Murray said, "We take diversity in our school district very seriously, with tolerance of people who are different. We just felt this teacher had crossed the line." Can we unpack that one for a minute? "We take diversity in our school district very seriously, with tolerance of people who are different." How in the F was this young man different? Apparently, Dan Murray, Fairfield City Schools board president, thinks that he's different because of the color of his skin. Well, I got news. He's not different because of the color of his skin or his gender. He is simply a young student. I appreciate what Mr. Murray is trying to say here, but in that statement, isn't there the essence of a little bit of a problem? Is he different because he wants to be president? Well, hard to think that, because if he'd been a white kid, is Gil Voight going to say, "This country does not need another white president"? That would never happen. To the white kid, you say, "Well, son, you're going to..." Let's say the kid's not that great a student. You say, "Well, son, you want to do that? You're going to have to work a lot harder and make a lot better grades. You're going to have to really, really commit yourself to the effort." What a great moment for doing some encouragement. "He wasn't a very good student. He was troublesome." What a great moment to turn that around. "This country does not need another black president." Muslim. Yeah. Which in turn brings this to mind. The tweet of some person by the name of Chris Crockett. All I know is that Chris Crockett is some sort of a right winger. He's a big fan, among other things, of the National Rifle Association and the Duck Doofus. And somewhere around Christmas or Christmas Eve, he took to the Twitters. Chris did. And we can have fun deconstructing this one too. Hint: when your tweet begins, "I'm not racist, but..." Well, things are going to get real interesting after that, aren't they? We kind of know that there's some racism coming, don't we? "I'm not ra-..." And I'm Agent... really, Agent Fred, listen up. This is journalism. This is a repetition, somewhat modified, of what Chris Crockett, Doofus, said. It is in no wise editorial or advocating his position, Agent Fred. I'm not racist, but could someone, Pools, PLZ, I'm not racist, but could someone please shoot that effing N-word president? He is a Muslim piece of shit. He deserves to be killed with the rest of him Muslim family. Wowzer. He's from Pennsylvania, I think, so he couldn't be possibly be one of Gil Voigt's former students. Could the humorless guys with the skinny ties who talk to their wrists maybe have a little chat with Mr. Crockett? After which, I'm sure the right wing can turn him into a hero and he can be on the O'Reilly program on Fox. Oy. Yeah, very good myth in the chat room. I'm not an idiot, but when it says hot, do not touch, I just can't resist. I'm not a racist, but... Please to remember someone raised him to be that way. So it's a minute past the hour. Time to everybody to mosey up to the front porch. Not really that cold outside yet. We'll get a couple of those infrared overhead heaters going just for something. And, you know, you can warm up internally with some corn squeezins or ice cold this or a glass of that or maybe a hot cup of mulled cider. Who knows? But it is. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn. And you are welcome to join in. I encourage you to join in either via Skype or via the phones, 304-658-3333. We'll take a little break and then get after it. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. Trying to raise $150 this evening, like we do every evening, and we're at $150 to go. We'll get the conversation started post-haste. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Said it was your duty, yours to fulfill. You joined the peacetime army, it's no longer a drill. Take a look around, if you have any doubts. To free the world from tyranny, that's what this is about. And they say, it's gonna take some time. Every day, there's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves they can't sustain. At home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and oil men cash in. Widows in office cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and a poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, fire on the earth, time to tell the truth. What is this worth? And the children that today are playing games, conscription, tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans
cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
Seemed appropriate given the way the conversation or the evening started. John Koontz, K-O-O-N-C-E, from 2004. The album Accessory to the Crime and the song Rich Man's War. It is Friday on the front porch here on the Horn, and we've got the Skype group all fired up and ready to go. Mouseketeer, roll call.
I'm here, Bob.
Hey, Duncan.
Jeremy's here. I know I talked to him. And Tim, I don't know what he's...
I'm here.
Yeah, there's Tim.
I'm here.
And then there's Steve.
Hello.
Hey, Steve.
Hi there.
And I'm sure more will be joining shortly.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening? Well, yeah, I'm sure more people will pop in short order. Let me bring some of the other side of the Skype or the other side of Friday on the front porch online. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm well, Jim. How about you?
Pretty good.
Excellent. All right, let's see who we got next. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Kevin. So let's see, Jim and Kevin, and hey, welcome to the program.
Same to you.
Hey, what's happening, Bill?
If I knew where it was, I'd be there.
Oh, well, you're happening, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the way we all feel, Bill. Yeah. If we knew where we were, we'd be there.
Yeah, it's the old joke, you know. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good, Billy.
Same old, same old.
The question is, how are you?
I've been worse, been better. You know, you can't get used to this crap sometimes, but it's happening. You know, what's frustrating to me is I used to think I knew everything. And now I'm finding out not as much. But to hear good human voices is fine, you know. Can't have everything.
But if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need.
Yeah, I said that when I was 12, I think, Bob. Yeah, you picked up on that right away, huh? Yeah, what a waste of my time, huh?
Oh, yeah, God.
How's it going?
Pretty good. You know, nice couple of days away. I hate being away from the microphone, but it was a nice couple of days away.
Well, we had a couple of decent days. My one good roommate, he was gone for a couple of days out having a good time, and I think he was down at Our Lady of the Angels praying away, and you know, other than that, things are livable. And Thomas, is Thomas there?
No, Thomas isn't in yet. He's
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's shepherding the call right now.
Yeah, I'm having some real messes with them. This online stuff, you know, trying to figure out how it works.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone.
Hey, good evening, Sergi.
Good evening, Sergi.
What's happening in Fort Worth?
Oh, nothing much. Just cold and dry.
Well, that's better than cold and wet or cold and frozen, though, isn't it?
It does beat having the ground be solid, slippery ice like it was a little under a month ago.
Yeah.
The sun just came out here.
Still no rain, though, right, Duncan?
No rain. They had to make snow up on the mountain. And they say it'll be gone by Thursday. They opened the ski park yesterday.
At least the rollerblading part of it?
Well, they got some of the runs going, I guess, from what I read. There was a picture in the paper of the ski lift going, people going up in the ski lift with no snow underneath it. So, and I know the Sierras are the same way, over by Tahoe and Reno. But it wasn't for man-made snow, they wouldn't open.
Going up the ski lift with snow, no snow underneath it.
Right. Because they only put the snow on the runs. And then it'll all be gone within a week.
Global warming?
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, because it doesn't get... It melts and then... during the day, and then it freezes at night.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like skiing on ice, I'm told. Really, it really stops being skiing and starts being more like free-form bobsledding.
Been there, done that. It's not that fun.
Yeah, speaking of sliding down things, Jeremy, how's the water park?
Awesome. It was 86 degrees the whole time. And wasn't very crowded because it was Christmas Day.
I saw the pictures you put on Facebook.
Yeah, looked like a blast.
The last time I was there, there was one building. That was like 10 years ago. Now there's two hotels. It's a massive complex. It's pretty nice.
Where's this at?
JP, Vermont. It's in Westfield, Vermont. It's right near the Canadian border.
Jeez. It was 80 degrees here today in Pomona.
Oh, hey guys! I wanted to bring something to your attention. If you didn't already know, I had it in the stacks prior to Christmas, but I didn't want it to get lost in all the Christmas chaos. We have some news regarding our Cassie.
Ooh.
Yes, and it's quite impressive news, really. I heard from the last time we talked to her, she was out looking for law schools, kicking the tires and that kind. Well, she's applied to a lot of different places, and she has been accepted at American University in D.C.
Ooh.
She's been accepted at Vanderbilt.
Ooh.
She's been accepted at Duke.
Wow.
She has been, I'm probably missing a couple somewhere along the way. She has been accepted at UVA. She has been accepted at UCLA.
Ooh.
And
doing well, Cassie.
and just heard in the last week, she's also been accepted at Penn.
Damn.
And drumroll, please. Stanford.
Oh my gosh.
So she's hit a pretty good lick there.
And the two with the free ride are UCLA and American.
Right.
Well, she comes to UCLA, I'll go take care of her.
Okay, you will. Between you and Tracy, we can get the welcoming committee pulled together, right?
Oh hell yeah, hell yeah.
To me, anybody with first-class tools can run into a first-class project. That's one hell of a deal.
Yeah, but the thing is, the scholarships bear, you got to look at them real hard, because a lot, when you get up around law school, they start playing games with scholarships, like putting things like no-win clauses in them. This is a full-ride scholarship as long as you maintain a grade point average higher than we even calculate. But that was
A plus plus, huh?
Right. Yeah. A 4.96 grade point average on a 3-point scale. But that's a pretty big deal. Of course, I've have suggested that stand not upon the order you're going, but go at once to Stanford. But, you know, that's me. Although, you know, there aren't any bad schools in that list.
You get so suspicious after a while, you wonder if somebody didn't come sneaking in from somewhere, you know. I'm being facetious, of course, but...
Well, she's gonna graduate from Princeton this summer with a whale of a GPA, and I think she's still waiting to hear from Harvard and one other. She did not apply. She did not apply to Yale. She does not like Yale.
Skull and bones. Yeah.
Well, she went up to visit him when she was starting college and just found it to be entirely icky.
I mean, she didn't like Jan Janssen from Yale.
So I wanted to let that little announcement have its own sort of standalone quality. Man, are you guys just tired? Are you guys just tired and still full from Christmas or what? I don't recall you guys being this quiet.
I was just wondering if she gets little videos or something of some of those colleges and just see what it there without having to go there.
I don't know. I imagine there's stuff you can find out there, but you know, it's all a crapshoot until you're done with the first semester. You really can't. Curricula are largely similar in terms of courses, but it's the quality of the teaching and the style of the teaching that makes all the difference in the world. You can have a lousy professor at Harvard and a great one at Thumb Fingers U. But the big difference is the percentage of supposedly really awesome professors in these upper. I mean, you know, she could have gone to Bolt Hall, Cal Berkeley, and maybe had John Yoo, the torture guy, for a professor. And don't think she would hesitate to put on her pointy-toed cowboy boots and go and kick the snot out of him.
Did she apply to Berkeley?
I don't think she did. Probably because of John Yoo, although I'm speculating wildly now.
What a thought.
Jesus.
Well, all right, let's do back up just a minute. Good Christmases all around for those who celebrate them, or holiday, or however we want to call it.
Except for my beer can chicken was a flop.
Oh, what? Oh, no. Why?
Uh-oh.
Because the barbecue got too cold.
Barbecue
didn't work.
Oh, what? So what? Did you neglect the fire for a while, or?
Yeah, kind of. And then I went out there, and it was a little chicken. I thought it'd cook real good, you know, but then it kind of fizzled. So I had to put it in the oven we got. But it made an excellent soup yesterday.
Oh, the day after soup is always good. Well, we managed to carry out the 100-year-old plus tradition of the oysters, so I felt like, you know, my mission was accomplished.
I saw those pictures. Was that a muffin pan?
Well, yeah, we did. We fry some, and then we do oysters d'Anvil with the other half, and those were the oysters d'Anvil.
Tough.
They look tasty.
Oh, they are. There's so much stuff around them that, because what it is when you're able to get real oysters in real oyster shells, you put the oyster the hot, you know, one side of an oyster shell has a deeper concavity than the other side does. So you take the convex side, you shuck the oyster, you put him in the shell, and then you put the topping on it, and then you put them in the oven. Only when you've got oysters out of a jar, you have no shells, so you use a muffin tin. And of course, every year it's become an annual tradition. what ingredient of the oyster's bienville will Bob forget? And it can get a little complicated because it's bacon and butter and flour and milk and onions and garlic and cayenne pepper and green onions and Parmesan cheese and parsley and lemons and wine and eggs to make the topping. And some years I forget the parsley. Some years I forget the green onions. Some years I forget the wine. This year I forgot the Parmesan. And ran down to the little convenience store that was open on Christmas Day. And they had lottery tickets, and they had beer, and they had cat food and condoms. No Parmesan cheese.
What did you expect?
Well, come on, Jim. One of those crappy little cans of Kraft Parmesan cheese? I mean, I at least held out a little bit of hope, but no.
I've never seen any convenience store that had Parmesan cheese, whether it's fresh or in a can or whatever.
Oh, I'm not talking about they're going to have the big 50-pound wheel there. No.
I said I've never seen them have any type of Parmesan cheese, so I mean, that. Oh well.
No, I'm curious. I'm gonna I'm gonna run down to the Rippy Mart as soon as the program's over and find out. It's too late, but just because my curiosity is now piqued.
Now see up here, I don't think
I'd waste the gasoline if I were you.
Kathy pointing out up in Ohio, our Stop and Go has canned Parmesan cheese.
Yeah. Hell, you wouldn't be able to make backyard pasta sauce without it.
And of course, as soon as those things came out of the oven, nobody waited, and so there was a lot. And you know, after 15 or 20 minutes in a 400 degree oven, they're pretty much the same temperature as the interior of the sun. And there was a lot of howling, but it was much enjoyed. Okay, so we got Duncan's beer can chicken. We got the oysters. Anybody else? Anything? Oh, there's Thomas.
Mexican.
Oh, yeah, Tim?
Yeah, we have Mexican.
Such as?
Beef and chicken. What do they call it again? Not enchiladas, but Oh, what's those things wrapped in corn called again?
Oh, tamales.
Tamales, yeah.
Yummy.
Carne asada beef. Oh, they're good. Carne asada beef and chicken and just beef, chicken all over the place. And we have Japanese food, too, and just a plethora of different foods. And a lot of beer and alcohol.
Good. So have you checked in on the New Year's Eve festivities with your neighbors?
Yeah, it's going to be noisy.
Oh, cool. Yeah, for the great 2013-2014 Skype-a-palooza on the horn.
There's probably going to be a lot of boomings and bangings and whatnot, and a lot of Mexican music.
Well, we're making the chat room hungry, so... Yeah, Lottie says, I had the best Christmas Eve ever. I stayed home. How was the octopus? There's a delay involved with that question because he's in the chat room, not in the Skype group. Big dinner over your way, Thomas?
I'm muted. We had the family over, the little man, and we just had our, you know, ham and scalloped potatoes, and Mom cooked up fresh cranberries the night before, and it was all good.
Lovely, lovely.
Well, he had a ham beating on the front door, but they wouldn't unlock it. I'm kidding you, Thomas.
So, Bill? What are you hearing these days? The latest on your situation and
Pretty good. I've had some minor go around with these so-called, you know, the people that want you to do physical therapy. I laugh in their face. The reason I'm laughing so hard at them, when I was 50, I set records. After a heart attack, I set records for... What do they want me to do? Fly through the air? You know, they think they're going to push you to make you... First of all, get me some decent equipped PA, some decent physical equipment to work with. And you'd see some things, you know? But that's why I'm kind of joking, is the standpoint's lousy. I mean, I took physical therapy at a real physical therapy house after a minor heart attack. Well, of course, I was only 50 at the time. But still, compared to what's going on now, if you call brushing your teeth minor physical therapy, I'm surprised, you know. Well, I think in my case, finding one might be a little more fine minor physical therapy. I don't know. Yeah, you gotta laugh at yourself.
Sure.
Keeps you going. I got a kick out of the other night of getting the award handed to me from Texas Betsy. It's an honor to hear from someone whose educational honors make mine look like a you know. She's an honor to deal with. As is most of the rest of this class. I can't believe it sometimes that I'm sitting and talking with a bunch of guys like you. I think, well, how the hell did that happen? Oh, well. I didn't even get caught with a hat and a, you know, with my hand in a crankshaft trying to steal a tool, you know. So it's pretty good, you know. I'm kidding.
Bill, the honor... Oh, go ahead, Bill, sorry.
Jump in, Jeremy.
I was going to say, Phil, the honor in talking to you is all on us. Don't ever think it's the other way around. We love hearing from you all the time.
Well, you know what it is. If you're around long enough and they pump you full of enough gasoline, you can manage to spit it back out if you absorb enough, you know. And that's the thing. I've been able to absorb an awful lot that you guys have been so busy trying to do the minor thing like... make a wage and pay it to your family and all that minor stuff, you know. I'm being facetious, of course. So the rest of it was just about past me when the shit hit the fan. And the farther away you are past the fan, you get hit with a lot more dust, but a lot of it doesn't stick, you know. So the honor is all mine, gents.
Well, I was going to say somebody took the vortex, turned it upside down, and shook it, and we all fell out and landed in the same place.
That's about as good an explanation as any.
Yeah. Sometimes I can't put it the way I'd like to, you know. I've talked to a friend of ours from Southern Ohio. I said, you start out in a school where... not everybody looks like you and blah, 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 but you keep talking to this kid and that kid, and you find out that most of the kids are talking about the same crap. And then you get older and older, and you find out there are. It's called survival, you know.
Oh, by the way, we haven't had an update from Isaac. The story about the school in Ohio with Gil Voigt, the science teacher who knows precisely how many black presidents America needs. Isaac sent me a tweet a little bit ago, said, in Fairfield County, Ohio, you can count the black people in that county on one hand. So, jeez. Well, another good thing to be saying goodbye to 2013 over. Although, realistically... let's do this. I mean, we'll be having the Skype-a-palooza and everything, but everybody chime in. 2014 better or worse than 2013?
Way better for me.
Well, yeah, because you are now a free man, right?
Well, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you'd call that being retired and on pension and Social Security.
That's what I mean. You are no longer beholden to the economy. You bought in and paid for yours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now I just get to play. I get to play this old house now. Like just a few minutes ago, we had a mouse sighting outside the door.
Oh.
We put out bird seed for the sparrows, and we have a couple blue jays that come up. Well, evidently, and my dad puts it out, and he has his little mobility scooter thing right outside the back door.
With the speed limit sign.
On the new sidewalk they put in for him. But anyway, the mouse was up in the seat eating a bird seed he spilled on the seat. And my wife was looking out the kitchen window, saw it, and she started screaming for me. My dad had to come in here and get me. Tell me about it.
Did she get the shotgun?
No, but I'll get the mouse traps out. And when we first moved down here, I said, hell, we live in the country. We're going to have mice. They get in. Somehow they get in.
And so, so you're now in Operation Mouse. Is that it?
I'll start Operation Mouse tomorrow. I have to move some stuff and set some traps. And
why do I have this vision of Bill Murray in Caddyshack with the little mouse shaped C4 and the?
While I'm at it, I'm gonna probably get some ground squirrel stuff too. We had where we took all the busted up sidewalk, the old sidewalk. I piled it up by the back fence. It's turned into a ground squirrel jungle gym out there. They're digging all over underneath them.
Yeah, a lot of people would be very adamant about the whole thing. Me, I guess I don't much give a damn. If something else is eaten and then costing me a fortune to feed them, what's the difference?
Well, Jan R., in the chat room says, I hope 2014 will be better, but I don't depend on unemployment. And that's kind of actually where I was secretly headed, is this country just going to continue to run off the rails?
You mean there's still some rails left?
Well, yeah, run on the cross ties then, Bill. You're absolutely right.
Do you think they're going to add that extension? I don't think so.
Well, what, Jim? They come back on the 3rd or so of January. Primaries start up pretty quick in 2014. But
I wouldn't count on it, though. I really wouldn't.
Well, I hope they pass something in the Senate and make the House turn it down. Either vote on it or not vote on it.
Yeah, eat it. Own it.
I mean, they're still beating on Obamacare on Fox, and
oh god!
I walked in there the other night on and what's his name, the guy that was on CNN and we went over to Fox, the business channel.
Well, the phone.
Oh, can you talk about?
Oh, geez, I can't remember.
They give a percentage of that on Obamacare: 65% against, 35% for.
Well, I'll see. We just had somebody chime in on the fourth telephone line.
Hi, Bob. This is Sal.
Oh, hey, Sal. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. And I was listening to the show, and all the streams seem to be unacceptable to me now.
The streams?
Yeah. I tried Tuner, I tried Link from the website, I tried TuneIn Radio, and all of them are just kind of connecting forever. So,
well, that's weird.
What the heck? I'll call in.
Great idea. Let me ask the chat room real quick. Because we're sending fine and dandy, not even seeing any buffering here. But
well, there's okay. A lot of buffering going on here.
There has been.
Mm-hmm. Certainly has been. And I could barely hear your last caller who came on. I don't know if it's me or him.
Okay. Well,
hey, Bob, Jim's not the only one. I've noticed buffering too. You've cut in and out here and there.
Okay. Let me get a note back to Ben.
Get that PMFH hammer there.
Oh, they start working on the high-speed rail in California next year, right?
Well, are they? I mean, the last I saw was that court decision that kind of threw a monkey wrench into the whole process.
Yeah, hey, Bob.
I heard too.
Greg in San Diego says his stream is fine.
Okay.
Okay, well, I guess it's just me then.
Well, we'll find out. I appreciate you letting me know, Sal, because I've sent this off to. I just sent a note off to Ben, so hopefully he can take a look at it.
Okay. Well, at least
well, I told you about it last week. How bad it was.
Let's see.
Apparently, it's on schedule, according to the AP.
Greg was using the Horn website link.
Okay. Yeah, Mark in Central Florida says 5x5, so. Stream's good. Rob says the stream's good in Minneapolis. So.
Okay. I guess I'm special.
No, I don't think you are. I think if one person's having a problem, somebody else is having a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I've had it before buffering on TuneIn when I was using the Kindle. Not today, though.
Let's see here. Okay, I've never seen this one before. Artist
coming
stroke.
Strong. Go ahead, sorry, Bob.
Artist just said, stream's fine, but it says you're another station. So, we'll maybe get a little detail on that. Oh, dear God, who knows? Since that federal judge today held, the other federal judge today held on the ACLU suit that data mining and warrantless eavesdropping is fine and dandy by him or her. Who knows what kind of mischief Agent Fred is up to as the year rolls to a close. So now we have an official conflict in the circuits, which means that the decision will, with almost absolute certainty, go up to the rats. You know, you were talking about mice, Duncan. Rats are always worse. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia.
There's no exterminating those.
No, and I don't think you're even allowed to talk about it.
That's rats.
Hey, Jim. You there?
Yeah, right here. 5x5.
Well, I was just going to say, that's where we gotta go and get into that old... That old Jimmy Rushy song here, you know?
I'm sorry, Bill. Could you repeat that?
Old Jimmy Rushing song from Count Basie's days. Mr. 5x5.
Oh,
5
okay.
feet tall and 5 feet wide.
Oh, right. Okay.
Classic piece.
Absolutely.
My mother said my father would get nailed with that every time he walked into a room somewhere. So...
God, I haven't heard of that, but I don't know how long. How are you doing?
Yeah.
Really? Are they treating you okay?
I'm hanging in, sir. I'm beginning to. Well, what I didn't like at first was too much of this. These guys are trying to manipulate this small stuff into bigger stuff. You know, these two-bit or smaller little health agencies are not the big stuff like you're used to. Because I'm supposed to be with one of the biggest ones, and but it'll fall into place. So that's.
Well, it's just
the main thing is. Pardon?
It's just as long as you continue to proceed out of the woods, as the saying goes, right?
Yep. See, we're supposed to be happy with the fact that we're reaching out and touching somebody, whereas, man, with these big hospital situations, you'd think it would be a lot simpler. But it isn't.
No,
and we're still working slowly.
I think there's a lot to be desired in the quality of care that people receive in these hospitals. I think there's a definite diminution in the quality of care and stuff like that. So, really, the patient is really placed a lot on his own because you've got a lot of people up there who, well, you wonder about why they're even there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. We could get by with a lot of Mr. Smallball, so to speak. You know, then we do. We could have got by with a lot more Mr. Smallball instead of Mr. Major League Ball.
Okay. All right.
But it works.
I'll take your word on that. I think you're probably right. But I hope you continue to improve and mend, and so eventually you can see your light at the end of the tunnel. I know.
Well, the only thing that's getting me is trying to get
the at Christmas. That's for damn sure.
Well, there's a couple guys out there that really need to dig up my code. You know, my large station and small station code for the. I don't care if it's for buying a pair of socks or whatever that. That's been kind of buried, but these guys will get it because they have a lot more knowledge of this crap than I ever had. You know, my knowledge, I think it ended somewhere around, maybe professional wrestling. I'm not sure, you know. And I just enjoy the hell out of hearing these guys talk and make me feel like, gee, Bill, you're not a complete imbecile, because this guy here who you respect backs you up in his thinking and your thinking, so you're not too far off after all. And that's a devil of a thing to be able to say in this world. To not feel like you're in outer space somewhere.
Well, a little approval goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. Well, if you remember, Jim, I don't know if you remember, who the hell was that guy? The books that were popular in the early 50s, Inside the Spaceships and Flying Saucers Have Landed. You remember that bunch of guys from up around New Jersey somewhere?
The guys that actually had a close encounter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember about that. There's some other stories that have gone out about people who have experienced similar things. And, of course, when they brought them to the fore, they've been sort of quieted down.
Well, my problem is one of them was connected with the Duke, the Duchess of...
Windsor?
Pardon?
Of Windsor?
Over in Europe.
Yeah, the Duke and Duchess of what? You talking about the Windsor?
Well, even more so than them were the Queen of the Netherlands got herself involved in that stuff, too.
Hmm.
But that's a long time. My mother bought those books, and I read them, and course, walked away from him scratching my hand with hit with both fingers, you know.
Oh, I definitely believe they're out there. Because I've had experiences of my own. One in particular, I'll never forget it.
What was it?
Yeah, don't leave us hanging like that.
Well, I was waiting for someone to ask, basically, coming back from, I think it was Charlotte in the 70s. Well, God only knows what. But this, in riding in a convertible, all of a sudden this white light appeared overhead, and believe you me, I know the sound of a helicopter, and it wasn't there was no helicopter at all. And then it stayed, and then when it took off, it left streaks of light behind it, faster than any type of machine that we have, because I don't care what kind of machine you've got, that we're, it's in our inventory, it's going to make a noise. This was totally silent. And
were you a little unnerved?
At the time, I really didn't care, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember when I was discussing this with, who was it? Oh, it was a... It was a full colonel I worked for at Andrews, and later was called back into her office, and she asked me if I would please just not to recount, tell that story anymore, if I didn't mind. Very diplomatic, extremely, very cautious in her tone, though. She said, I really would not be spreading that around too much, if you don't mind. Because you know what the official policy of the Air Force is. And I said, yes, ma'am. Click my heels. Well, I didn't have to click my heels for her, but I, from anybody else I would have, I said, surely, no problem.
This wasn't the one with the giant Bible, was it?
Oh, no, that creature, God Almighty.
I remember the giant Bible officer story.
Well, now, the one with the giant Bible has gone on within the military hierarchy to be instrumental with what they call Dakowitz. It's a program for women in the Army, stuff like that. And I forget what that acronym stands for. There's so many of those acronyms, hell. There are Bibles of acronyms that they published, and they're as thick as the Bible she had, but nonetheless, I just happened to see that on the internet, and I thought, well, I wish her well. And
We have, by the way, Jim, we have an answer to Bill's question earlier. Mark just wrote in and said Queen Juliana and George Adamski.
I was going to say Juliana, but I didn't want to say something that wasn't, of which I wasn't totally sure. Yeah, I remember something about Queen Juliana. And, of course, you know, you've had a lot of problems with, there was a problem around an Air Force base in England in which they had some difficulty, and they had to quiet that down, too. And I can't remember the name of the installation there. And, the British Isles, but nonetheless, I mean, this was in England proper, I believe, and all of a sudden that got real quiet. And, you know, when you're in that situation under the command of whomever, and you are, well, ordered not to say any more, if you have any sense. Well, as Khrushchev once said, when Stalin says dance, the wise man dances. So that's just about the only way I can put that. But like I say, I believe they're out there. I really do. I hope they're friendly. Chances are they won't be, because they'll be probably predatory, looking for something, because they've had to leave their own planet, because as George Bernard Shaw once said, there's got to be life on other planets, because Earth is where they send all their insane people.
Well, or they may not be friendly simply based on the way that they observe us behave.
No, I think if they have enough, if they have the technology to reach us, they can take care of that, PDQ. And, they can sort of come out like Michael Rennie did and said, well, Gort Parada Nectu. And they could say, well, if you people can get your affairs in order, and if you threaten to bring lack of harmony or disorder to the world the way in which we see it, we can reduce your little blob into a burned out cinder. When I was a boy, I saw that movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, with Michael Rennie and Patricia Neal. And, it made a great impression upon me. It really did. Can you imagine what would happen if one of those would land on the Mall? If there's a space on the Mall to land one. But nonetheless, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, we'd be shooting at it before it ever got anywhere near ground, wouldn't it?
I don't think it would do us a great deal of good to do that.
Well, but then again, you're using common sense, Jim.
Well, they tried to do that, and of course, I think now, I think they'd have enough sense to realize, let's see what these people have to say before we try anything crazy, because if they have the technology to trans from one world to the other, then you can imagine how inferior our technology would be against theirs. That's just common sense. Or you might have a few people who might want to. Of course, you've got a few fools in the world who shoot at anything. But nonetheless, I think they would probably show a little admirable restraint. At least I hope so. And who knows? Maybe one day it will happen, and maybe one day it will never happen, because maybe one day they will decide this planet is just too troublesome and too irksome for us to concern ourselves with in any way, and pass on to other worlds that are a little more composed and sane.
I just had a note in from Jay Cruz, and he said, just got a chance to tune in. Good to hear all you guys. I was going to log in for Friday on the front porch. He says, but my wife is extremely nauseated from surgery today. He says, not sure if it was the anesthesia or the Demerol, but she's finally sleeping, so it's best to stay quiet. Tell the guys I said hi, and tell Jim it's no mystery. That was the Flying Spaghetti Monster. All hail the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Ramen.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it was the Flying Spaghetti Monster. No. What I saw was no flying spaghetti monster.
No two glowing orbs for eyes or noodly appendages?
No.
Yeah. Oh, and Jeremy went looking. The Rendlesham Forest incident was what you were thinking of in the UK.
Mm-hmm. There was a big quietus put on that, big time. And they had a lot of, let me put it this way. There was a lot of speculation and, of course, investigation about that. And, these things are filed away, and we will never know what they really know. Because if you can imagine what the acknowledgement of certain things like that would be, that it could threaten a lot of people's beliefs and whatever. But strangely enough, the Vatican recognizes that. They recognize the possibility of extraterrestrials. They always have. Or at least they have for quite a while. Not always, but they have. And one of the major things when I saw it when I was at the Vatican was their observatory. They have a tremendous observatory there. Beautiful telescope and all types of equipment.
I've always wondered, anybody that is religious, if they believe in the all-knowing, all-powerful God, why is it so hard to believe that he wouldn't have planets with other people existing somewhere else? And even if you're not religious, I think the latest thing that came out is there's billions of planets in the solar system that are that have the qualifications for the inhabitation of quote unquote intelligent life, have the right amount of air, water, all that kind of stuff. And I think it's a matter of time, may not be in my lifetime or our grandkids' lifetime, but I think one day we'll discover life somewhere else. We have, for that matter, discovered life somewhere else already, because they've discovered water on Mars. And water, by virtue of the fact it's water, has life to it. Microbes and things like that. So, you heard me mention the other day about the guy, I can't think of his name now, but he was talking about the fact that he was preached against in sermons because he dared to say that he had had a visit from an alien, and it was demonology. Well, again, if I'm an alien and I come to this world and find out they're calling me a demon and they got their pitchforks and torches ready for me, I'm really not going to work up making myself too well known to these people. And so that might be the reason, aside from government secrecy, why we don't know that these people do exist for sure.
But strange, then why is the Vatican acknowledged their belief in the possibility of that?
Well, that's what I mean. I haven't. That's kind of what I'm saying, Jim. Is that?
I mean, I have seen no gatherings in St. Peter's Square of peoples and with pitchforks and axes when that announcement was made.
No, and I don't think that's exactly who Kevin is talking about either.
Right, no, I'm talking about the Bible thumping people down in bumfuck Alabama.
Or Colorado Springs, Kevin. I mean, let's be fair.
Yeah, but I'm talking about them snake handler type people who, and it is all over. It's all over. It's in every city in this country, Bob. There are people that still believe that you're possessed by demons, controlled by demons, the devil made you do it, et cetera, et cetera. And it's extremely scary to think that people still believe things like that in 2013. I have my own beliefs in God or in the existence of life after death, and I do believe in life outside these planets, outside this planet. But if I'm going to go out and say that to the world, I guarantee you there's going to be somebody like Ralph Messer saying that I've got a demon because I said that.
Well, one of the very finest of the old science fiction short stories was a piece by Arthur Clarke called The Star. And it's about, I don't want to ruin it for anybody. Go find it. It's probably not difficult to come across. But it deals with that very question you're asking. And a very short piece, well worth the time it would take to read it. Let's see here. I've got another blinking light here, and I need to bring somebody. I'd like to bring that person on, if anybody wants to clear a space.
Well, I'll drop off. Give me about 20 seconds to get back to my computer and fire up the computer voice again, and then I'll drop off the line.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out which one you are, Kevin. Sorry, I'm not exactly
one
sure.
One with light blinking.
No.
Can't help.
No, but at any rate, I appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you very much.
No problem, and Happy New Year to all of you. If I don't talk to you sooner.
All right. Well, you know, we'll be having the New Year Skype-a-palooza. So.
Yeah, I'm actually hoping maybe I can get my Skype fired up before then, but I keep running into stores that don't have the damn headsets, and at the moment can't get them offline. So, anyway, I'll drop off and I'll talk to you all later on.
All right, have a great weekend, Kevin.
You too.
All right. Bye. And let's see here. All right. And let's bring another person online now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, hi, it's Harry in Baltimore.
Hey, Harry, how are you? Good to hear from you. Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Well, thank you very much. I just mainly called to express my deep approval of these expanded Friday night on the Front Porch programs. Over the last few months listening to these have just been wonderful. So.
It is a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I got to say, tonight I'm not sure I can in any way contribute to what has been an amazing conversation about life on other parts of the universe and other things. And, you know, tonight you have on some amazing raconteurs, including, I'm so delighted to hear Bill Stress back on and everybody else. And I'm just amazed at the way the conversation has gone in the last 20 or 25 minutes.
Well, usually when we hear from you, it is by way of a very well written and carefully laid out email. It's nice to have you on the live vocal side of the equation.
Oh. Well, you're much too kind. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I feel very humbled this evening. But as I've written to you, Bob, at least a few times, I'm just so delighted that Mr. Bill Stress is feeling better. If he's still, I don't know if he's still on.
Yeah, he's. So. Are you there, Bill? Bill? Okay, Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, and Sal, are you there?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so somewhere along the way we lost...
In any case...
Bill dropped out, but he may very well be still listening.
Yeah. If he's listening, yeah, I'm just so glad that he seems to be improving, and I just hope he is patient enough to do in dealing with... you know, I remember being in the emergency room or having to spend overnight in the hospital several years ago, and yeah, it was annoying. There seemed to be a lot of people coming in and out who weren't doing much, but there were also a few really great people who were trying to help me and take care of me. So I hope he's patient and finds those people.
Indeed. Indeed. Well said.
And actually, I once read somewhere where someone was making the joke about the fact that when you're in a hospital, you're also called the patient. And the patient is supposed to be patient.
Yeah, you never get away from that.
right, exactly. You know, what's the why the double meaning? I have no idea. But I'm aware of the fact that the hospitals and places like that can be frustrating institutions.
Oh, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I think Bill. You know, Bill knows what he needs to do and will do it. But you know, I think Bill is in many ways like a lot of us. We don't respond well to order giving.
Absolutely, and I'm one of the worst. I hate taking orders. And your discussion, actually, when you talk, hearing you talk about your son registering for the draft, or excuse me, Selective Service, brought that all back to me about my own experiences. Right. Near the end of the Vietnam War.
Well, for some reason or another, it pissed me off, Harry.
I don't blame you. I remember my own father being. That was a different era, but you know, I could see that with my parents, they were feeling very anxious and nervous, and something beyond that also, maybe some sort of indignation. But yeah, I remember the day that I registered. In fact, I did it at that period of time. This was in 1972 or two, I guess it would have been. I did it through my high school guidance counselor, but still, it was still unnerving. And even though I think they had stopped picking numbers for the draft at that point, it was still highly made me anxious, and I still actually have my little card that I got that day. But
well, in my case, Harry, it was the last day of January 1981, and Ronald Reagan had been president for exactly 10 days, and I was scared out of my mind.
Why?
Because I trust, I figured that greasy old fool was going to get the world blown up any minute.
No, but you were in the middle of a volunteer army.
Yeah, I know, but that didn't mean that couldn't change.
But you know, I have something, and this conversation flows on. But I have something that I wish to interject at some point when it's appropriate. Okay.
Sure. But at that time, 10 days after the inauguration in 1981. Maybe a lot of people don't remember it, but the Cold War was on. That right wing old freak had run a campaign that was based on kowtowing to the Klan and waving guns at the Soviets in the middle of a Cold War. And yeah, I was scared. And it was that year that I turned down my appointment to the Naval Academy because I didn't want to be of any part of a military that he was going to be running.
I'm sorry. Something went down the wrong way.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to say, Bob, actually, even though I, you know, when I registered for Selective Service at that point, you know, there were the draft had stopped in a sense and we were pulling out of Vietnam. But I think until the end of the Cold War, I was definitely feeling nervous. And in fact, I guess there was some age that you reached that you basically at that point then realized you probably wouldn't be, you know, in any way, would you be less vulnerable? And I remember when I turned that age, I really did, heave a sigh of relief because, I was, you know, there was no draft, but I was still registered. And I can imagine how you felt about it. And then I can imagine as a father how you feel about your son registering and having to register.
Well, especially with the current state of war, you know. Like I said, we live in a world where our wars are fought for oil companies now. they might have a shiny veneer of patriotism on them, but we damn sure didn't go into Iraq for any altruistic. I mean, every time they tried to come up with an altruistic excuse for Iraq in 2003, it went over like a lead balloon.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. Remember
we were going to bring them democracy at the muzzle of a gun?
Oh yeah, well, right.
and then remember when George Bush told the Israelis that he invaded Iraq because God told him to?
Oh God, please don't remind me.
I know, Harry. It is physically painful to recall.
It is. It's very painful.
and the one that always Harry. Just the one that always just slobber knocked me, and it disappeared almost as quickly as it appeared, so it was really hard to catch. You remember the name of the war? It was Operation Iraqi Freedom, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, very few people noted, and this is the absolute truth. It started out Operation Iraqi Liberation, which very inconveniently spells oil.
Yes, I remember that too.
Well, I still recommend to anyone who listens who I can basically corner that they should. This book that was written by a psychiatrist at George Washington University called Bush on the Couch. I still recommend that book because I think it says a lot about his inner life and why he did what he did. And it's not pretty, believe me.
No.
Well. Yeah, that same guy also followed up with an Obama on the couch.
Oh, did he? I never heard anything about that one.
Really? That was, I think, Justin Frank, a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist, yeah. George Washington University. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I heard an interview with him on Cindy Sheehan's program within the last couple of years where he was talking about Obama on the couch and the fact that he had a lot more material for Obama because Obama had actually published, you know, his autobiography. And
right, right. Yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't know that, but yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that at all. But if you read Bush on the couch, you know, you find out some, even though Bush, you know, a lot of this was secret, or supposedly secret, and Bush had all sorts of problems, including, several learning disabilities and other problems early on that were apparently, like many wealthy families there, they were obviously covered up by his family.
Well, I've read enough about Bush standing on his own 2 feet rather than worry myself about Bush in a horizontal lab, you know?
Well, but it's the point of the book, Jim, is
Well, you can psychoanalyze any leader, and you can find all types of things and things like that. I mean, it's just amazing how you can psychoanalyze people living or dead. You know, that's my point. I mean,
others, right, people have done that. But actually, Justin Frank used records. He did get access to records from Bush's prep school and from college at Yale. And so, no, I mean, some of this is actually very, very much documented, including the learning disability part.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No, there's one thing I just wanted to interject ever since Bob mentioned something about the Selective Service and all those types of things. And this might upset some people. I hope it doesn't. But, you know, I have always thought it would be a good idea for every young person, male, female, from 18 to 26, to have to do 2 years of federal service. Now, whether that would be military or whether it would be working on projects to improve infrastructure, it would have to be conducted under a certain amount of discipline and control and learning how to follow orders and learning how to accomplish tasks and achieve objectives. I don't think it would be a bad idea. Everybody, male or female, unless they were physically incapable, would have to give 2 years of national service, be it military or civilian, mandatory.
Well, I think national service is a wonderful and, you know, wonderfully benign idea.
Well, sometimes it is benign, sometimes it's not. But, you know, this country needs, I think, the youth of this country, I think, need a great deal of guidance from the right people. And I think the country certainly needs their labor and their efforts. And I think whether it, you know, they elect to go into the military side or the civilian side, I mean, we've had programs like this, the Peace Corps, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a marvelous idea.
Well, with unemployment running around 7% as a pretty much standard number, I mean, I think it's open to discussion whether we're ever going to see the days of 4% unemployment again, new normal and all of that. I would have no objection to the reinvigoration of the WPA and the CCC. People need work because people need money.
Right, but it would have to be more controlled. It would have to be more directed. And, you know, you'd have to have that span of control enlarged in order for it to work. And the same amount of obligations would have to be, you know, to be incurred. And at the same time, for said condition of service, there would be, in fact, rewards, and there would be an investment in the future and the history of the country.
And perhaps a sense of purpose, Jim?
Exactly. Spirit. Camaraderie. Esprit de corps.
And Lord knows the CCC and the WPA did exactly that during the Depression.
Well, in certain cases it did, in certain cases it didn't, because you had a lot of people who were in there because that's the only thing you had to do. But, yes, it gave them a place. It gave them three hots and a cot, and it gave them money in their pocket, and it brought them out of an otherwise horrible existence of poverty. I mean, the Civilian Conservation Corps and the Works Progress Administration and the whole ABC agency type thing of the Roosevelt government, when it intervened to correct an economy and the entire country that was sliding into a morass, it certainly had very palliative and not punitive effects on people. I don't think any individual immersed from any of those programs being hurt in any way.
But, of course, that is not the nature of the system that is in place today.
Well,
it is specifically for purposes of recording and keeping a waiting pool of 18 to 25-year-olds who can, in an emergency, be called up and thrown into the meat grinder.
Well, that's part of the world in which we live, my friend. That's just the way it is.
Well, no, I think either we have an all-volunteer military or we don't.
Well, that is there, and it's not going to change. And by the way, Selective Service is not done by contractors either. And you, don't you have a local draft board?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Well,
I mean, none of that infrastructure is actually in place anymore.
Well, yeah, they have, but they can be brought, but it is there to be brought into place. I mean, they can bring it back tomorrow. That's what I'm saying. All these things are there as sleepers, so to speak, because of the advent of the volunteer army, okay, or the volunteer military. But it can all be brought right into being within, say, a week. Draft boards can be reestablished, things of that nature. They would have to be in order to process applicants and things of that nature. I know that for a fact.
I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we found out the hard way between, what, 2003 and 2006? Maybe 2007? We found out the hard way just how thin you can stretch the much vaunted all volunteer military in this country.
You can't do it. You cannot project force in that way for any length of time, given the manpower.
You had the Army reducing its recruiting standards to the point that it was more than happy to take in convicted rapists. Really?
That's my point. I mean, you know, everybody should be, you know, that's the thing. That as unfair to some as it may seem, in the long run, I think you can improve your force structure, be it for military or civilian operations and things of that nature. And the more prodigy and the higher element of the people you get, the better off you're going to be. So our military services should not be just a place where somebody else is going to go because the judge says so or because there's no other job that they can have.
Isn't that sort of what this conversation has been about, though? I mean, in the sense that if you don't have a socioeconomically diverse military, you know, is that going to be a credible organization?
The military is supposed to be a mirror of society.
Right.
That's the philosophy of it. And so you will have that. But you will have spanning control.
But the military as it exists is not a mirror of society.
And actually not in Vietnam, and that was part of the problem, was that you did not have the, you know, the wealthy sons, and even upper middle class sons, a lot of them not going because of the way that people of privilege were able to manipulate the system.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, and that's the reason I said it would be mandatory.
Yeah.
Period. There will be no deferment. And rich and poor, 2 years.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you know this because you're very much a man you keep in touch studying government. There have been proposals like this. Didn't even Clinton have one about national service?
Oh, I believe he did.
Yeah.
He never went.
Well, that was AmeriCorps, wasn't it?
Right.
They had AmeriCorps, and AmeriCorps just told us, I think, I'm not exactly sure what happened to it. It exists in some form or another. But basically, who knows what happened to it. And I think it's just a personal opinion of mine. And, nothing's going to hurt anybody who's healthy and who is in good physical shape and mentally capable to be subjected to discipline, order, knew how to mark, knew how to take orders, knew how to give them, and to know how to achieve goals and objectives. These are life tools in which many of our youth don't have. They just simply don't.
Well, I wonder, Jim, though, if public service has to involve, though, you know, all of the aspects of military service. I mean,
it has to from the beginning. You'd have to have a boot camp of sorts. Absolutely. You'd have to have basic training. you usually have people walking route step into something like that.
Well, I wonder by way of understanding what that structure would look like. What does a newbie entering the Peace Corps go through? And I think we've got listeners, members of the Horn family, who have done the Peace Corps thing.
I would love to hear their.
I mean, they don't just congratulate you, give you a laurel and hearty handshake, and send you on to, send you on to wherever the hell.
Oh no, you have common task training, and then you have specifically more advanced training depending on the area in which they're going to work and to do what they're going to do. But I'll tell you one thing. As far as the infrastructure of this country is today, I think a lot of the Peace Corps and VISTA and stuff like that, the work needs to be applied here to this nation. Because we're in no shape to set ourselves up above any other country or modern industrialized country because of the terrible shape in which we find our infrastructure. And the whole interior structure of this country. It's just fast going right down the tubes.
Well, it is. No, the country is in, beyond any shadow of a doubt, a mess. But income inequality, social inequality, the increasing lack of social mobility, We are fast approaching a class system that is far more entrenched than anything the UK or India even perhaps ever envisioned.
But you know, we had a lot of that before World War II, didn't we, Bob? And what happened from the things like the GI Bill?
Yeah, but that's not necessarily the outcome of a war or a military. It's the outcome of what we did with the military when it came home.
Well, precisely, and it engendered the ability of an entire middle class to not only receive education, buy homes, raise families, and the GI Bill created all of that. It really did.
The other side of that is it also created the permanent consumer culture. Uprooted a lot of rural people and urbanized them.
Well, that had to happen. That had to happen. I mean, what are they going to do? Just stay there all their lives?
They had for six and seven generations.
Poverty and ignorance.
I'm sorry, I lost that. What?
I said, what are you going to do? Have them just sit there and just stay there, where they grew up, depending on ma and pa and this type of thing, and not see the rest of the world and not improve themselves, or to just sit there and squalor and ignorance? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it was all squalor and ignorance. If a family through six or seven generations has successfully lived on a parcel of land, I don't think sacrificing them to reading and writing and Route 23 for the good of the economy. It's almost like conscription, isn't it? So instead of being surrounded by loving family on the place that's been occupied for, you know, six or seven generations, they get to go and live in tract housing in Akron. And, you know, that a lot of folks didn't play out that well for them that way.
Well, maybe.
And I say Akron, I don't mean Akron in particular, any number of places.
But I think the end result was be an improvement in their standard of living.
I think you can argue that, for instance, my parents' standard of living
and their access to education.
My parents' standard of living definitely increased. Their horizons broadened by moving to as place as, you know, hole in the wall as Alabama. But there was an economic boom going on. And yeah, there was a school system that did pretty good by me.
Probably a hell of a lot better than the one you found here.
It is a damn sight better. But
I mean, you know,
that doesn't mean that everybody who was basically forced into the consumerist economy had the same positive story. I imagine arithmetic means being what they are, Jim. There are as many bad ones as there are good ones.
Well, I'd say probably the arithmetic means definitely, as far as the good, would definitely exceed the bad.
Well, Jim and Bob, I guess what concerns me the most, though, is what, you know, in light of where we are now, you know, at this point in 2013, I guess I'm wondering, you know, how do we, in a sense, as a community or a civic culture, get ourselves, you know, out of the mess we're in now?
I think by a very strong hand and an extreme...
What kind of strength are you talking about?
Whatever it takes.
Oh, well.
That's just my opinion. Whatever it takes.
Well, frankly, I don't think... And by the way, just a reminder to the Skype group to just jump on in any time.
I was doing some looking up stuff.
Oh, okay. you know, I don't. On the one hand, you could say a very strong hand, and it brings nightmarish visions of authoritarians and despots, and you know, Republicans. On the other hand, a very strong hand could also mean an FDR. The sad thing, Jim, and I'm not just being disagreeable. The sad thing is, that is unlikely to happen in either scenario, whether it be a strong-handed, whether it be a strong-handed liberal or a strong-handed right-winger.
You're not going to have strong-handed liberals, so to speak, running places like this, because there are certain, you know, institutions.
No, I'm talking about the will to do something on a national level. I'm not talking about who gets appointed to run whatever institution you're talking about.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I guess some people would say that Krispy Kreme is a strong hand because he likes to scream obscenities at public school teachers.
I don't know who that is.
Chris Christie, New Jersey, the governor.
Well,
you know, I mean, he's got that Jersey attitude, and he'll tell a public school teacher to F off. And that means people think he's tough for that.
Yeah, I have a very savvy very old relative in New Jersey who tells me that Governor Christie has done some really terrible things in New Jersey.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and now it's finally coming out, the way that he tends to you know, take vengeance on people who oppose him or who in any way make him look bad. You know, politically within the state.
Well, FDR was the same way. Try crossing him. I'll guarantee you one thing. You never ever got over that, because once you ever crossed FDR, that was it. Now, that was FDR had a certain dual personality.
Yeah, I mean, consider Jim, that you know the House of Representatives, that's run by it's basically bedlam over there. They think that they're exercising a strong hand by telling those good for nothing people on unemployment to quit drawing their unemployment and go out and find a job, you know, that doesn't exist. And they think they're giving tough love to America when they tell people who are eating food that they need to quit eating so much food and go out and find a job that, again, doesn't exist. I mean, right wing strength is also often it's often a metaphor for brutality.
Yeah, I mean, in New Jersey, at least what my cousin is talking about really is pettiness, is incredible pettiness, and nothing to do with, you know, political strength or keeping a strong hand, but it's really just. Chris Christie not being able to tolerate any kind of disagreement and any kind of, you know, wrecking of his image in any way.
Well, you know, as far as image is concerned, I don't know what kind of image he has other than a man who's somewhat pretty much overweight, and maybe he has done some of these things. Yeah, yes, I agree with you. But like I say, we've had other politicians like FDR who've been just as petty in certain cases with people who have tried to get in their way. I mean, that's just history. That's it. But yet we are put a kinder face on it, I think, with the fireside chats and things of that nature. But if you work for him, and Lyndon Johnson was the same way, the creator of the Great Society, that's one man you didn't cross either. Because if you did, your ass was grass and he was a lawnmower.
Yeah, he might even pick you up by your ears or something.
Ask Jack Valenti, who worked for him.
And the little bridge incident has got Christie being looked at really hard now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Hayes did a big expose on the Hurricane Sandy relief last night on his program.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Because they got, I don't know how many billions of dollars they got, but there's people that are just haven't got any relief yet.
Well, Chris Christie is unnominatable in the unless, you know, something really momentous happens in the next 2 years. Simply because, you know, he palled around. I mean, you know, that man hugged that one, right?
I mean, right.
For as nasty as the man can be, he is not nasty enough to suit the teabaggers.
Apparently not.
I got another blinking light here before we run completely out of time. Let me bring somebody else on. Hey, who have I got?
Is it me? I'm Richard.
Oh, hey, Richard.
Oh, hey, wow. I didn't know what to do to participate.
Yeah, so we got Harry, we got Richard, we got Jim, and we got Sal, and then we got the Skype group.
And the Skype group.
I guess I'm on Skype, because...
No, you're on the phone.
No.
Thomas waved his magic wand. So
yeah, you're dialed into the phone system.
Okay, well, thanks, Thomas. I am here.
Yes, you are. Welcome.
Wow. Thank you.
Thomas is our magic wand. Phone guy.
Well, I'm still, I'm intending to join Skype, but only after I set up a sacrificial computer.
Well, it won't kill your computer.
No, I'm not worried about it killing the computer. I just like my privacy. I'll set up a special machine just for that.
They haven't come after me yet.
No, I know they haven't come after you. I just don't want to be folded, spindled, and mutilated by forces unknown to me.
Post no bills, use no hooks, this end up.
Yeah, right, you got it.
Way over 100 people have been in this group at one time or another.
No, I believe you.
On Friday nights.
Cool. Well,
maybe it'll be a real hopping affair come New Year's Eve, right?
Remember last year?
Yeah, God, it was huge.
We had Scott in Sweden and
wow.
And Sandra talking to each other.
Wow.
I just listened to the program the other night just to get a retake on it. That was monumental there.
Whose voice am I hearing right now?
That's Duncan.
Okay, hi, Duncan.
I'm your northern neighbor.
Yeah, we've typed at each other. You know, a little aside here, I have known two people who have died as voices who only existed on my computer screen. And in each case, I got a message from somebody else on their email account, you know, that said, whoops, you know, my buddy's passed on. And it was just like a real human being had died, you know. It's just such a strange thing to only know a person as words on the screen and yet feel a strong emotional connection.
Well, that's where I was going to go with it, Richard, is that you can... We have learned over the course of building this little community that you may never physically see or know someone, but you can build a pretty solid relationship along the way. And really, it's a bit of hubris. It's a bit of technological hubris for the late 20th and early 21st century for us to think that there's something different in that. I mean, there were entire relationships that were born out of nothing but correspondence in previous centuries.
That's true.
I mean, I think about the very famous, and Harry, you may back me up on this, I think about the very famous correspondence between Oliver Wendell Holmes and Judge Learned Hand. Those two never met. And yet they created a corpus of communication that still stands to this day in its humaneness and its inquisitiveness and its very real sense of caring and a meaningful discussion, for instance, on what free speech means. And we seem to be rather interested in that today. And that correspondence is well worth looking up.
No, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, there have been other, I can't think of it right now, but I'm sure there have been other famous correspondences.
I mean, can you imagine, I think about Jefferson, and I personally think Jefferson was seconded to Paris to keep him out of the Constitutional Convention, but I'm funny that way. they were up to things that he might not approve of. But he was also George Washington's Secretary of State, wasn't he? And was again, and he was in Paris at that point in time. Can you imagine? You know, we're not talking about the Glaspie cable that started the Iraq War. I mean, that was electronic communications that was, you know, speed of light. But can you imagine being your country's representative to somewhere? And the best hope you had was to send a letter saying, I'm doing this, and hope that it played well when it got where it was going 8 weeks later?
Yeah, that's pretty, it's mind-bending.
You know, what I was talking about was people who I never even talked with on the phone. Even though one of them was across the bay from me.
And Richard, are you from San Francisco or Berkeley?
I'm about three cities north of Berkeley.
Yeah, because we may have chatted.
We did on the screen, I think.
Yeah, I'm Larry.
This whole thing about knowing people as words is so interesting to me. I'm an audio person, and these are people I know in an audio context, and each of them was quite ill, and the one across the bay from me had cancer, I guess, of his throat, and also AIDS. I mean, one of these illnesses killed him, finally, and you know, I always wanted to talk with him, and. He didn't really say it, but it was there that, I mean, it was virtually impossible for him to talk. I think he had a hole in his neck. And, I don't know what else to say, but, except that I'm a good writer and I learned how to type in self-defense because my handwriting is so terrible. You know, my hand is uncontrollable when I'm trying to write. I have great facility with my hands. I'm a musician, you know, I can play fast, but for some reason it's like when I'm trying to write longhand, it produces scribbles and I can't even, when I was in college I couldn't even read my own notes, you know. But what I've noticed is that when I write longhand, it's different than when I type on a typewriter, and that's different from when I write on a computer.
You ever tried Dragon?
I don't have to use Dragon, but I have followed it, and I know people who do. Are you referring to anybody in particular?
No, I just wondered if you'd ever...
Dragon Dictate.
Using that.
Yeah, Dragon Dictate. No, but I know a radio broadcast engineer who has multiple handicaps, and he uses it to write with.
Well, I mean,
he has spina bifida.
Right. It's extremely useful too. I hate the commercials.
I know it is.
I hate the commercials. They're so damn long. I mean, God, if you you know, you can basically go in take care of minor chores while these Dragon commercial starts and before it ends. But apparently it seems to be working. I haven't tried it, but I'm thinking about it.
I use it now, Jim, for Jim and Richard. I use it now for typing papers and for if I have a lot of talking to do. They have a version for iPads, but it's not as good as the one for the computer.
Well, I don't need it. I'm a very fast typist. If I really get going, I type 130. A few mistakes, but and in fact, I can type so fast I can hurt my hand because it's like I'm trying to put the words out as fast as I can think them, and of course, no human can do that. So I've actually had to learn to back off.
That's where I always run into trouble because my mind gets way out in front of my hands.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Hey, Jim, is that you?
Is that I? No.
Yeah.
Right now, yeah.
Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you, man.
And likewise. And you are in California?
I am in the East Bay, diagonally across from San Francisco.
Oh, I have friends in San Francisco and also in Oakland. Have a lot of people I know in that area.
Oakland's a great city. I'm up the hill from Richmond, so I'm in unincorporated Contra Costa County.
Okay.
Are you in Pinole or Hercules or where?
I'm very close to both those cities.
Yeah.
I'm to the south of Pinole and Hercules. Hercules and Pinole right next to each other.
Oh, San Pablo, I don't know.
San Pablo is very close. It's closer to me than Pinole and Hercules.
I'll
tell you another good town, a great town, is Petaluma.
Petaluma is
that's a fun place. But let me tell you, if you want to have some,
it's dairy and
time,
cheese.
Go to Petaluma.
It's got a very, very vibrant downtown.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a long time, but
flea markets and fairs and stuff like that. And the artist drawings and stuff on the street.
Petaluma has, it's got Rohnert Park just to the north of
that's
it.
That's right.
Or almost. And Rohnert Park has this progressive California State University located.
Yep. Sonoma. Yeah.
Yeah, Sonoma State University. And they run this very dynamic news media program. I forgot the name of it.
It's called Communication Studies, and a couple of the people that started it, one of the people was Carl Jensen, who started the Censored, the Project Censored.
That's
a yearbook.
Project Censored.
Yeah. And Mike Lytle.
Hey, let me just running backwards for a minute to the GI Bill was brought up, and Mark sent in a rather trenchant email. He said the GI Bill was a reflection of the Bonus Army protests, which were a reflection in turn of workers' movements. Most World War II black veterans, Mark notes, were not recipients of the GI Bill. He said the answer is to redomesticate the economy, which, closing tax loopholes and forcing reinvestment in domestic economy through federal works programs, such as the proposed high-speed rail, would create somewhere around 1 million living wage jobs. A modern day WPA and civilian conservation corps with a devotion to community are a way out, he says. I'd agree. So,
and I'm getting sick listening to this.
We have
a moment to tell you what
conservation corps in California.
Well, no, my father was a fine artist, and he was one of the 3,000 artists who worked for the WPA. Mm-hmm. And that period was the only time when we had money in my family. And this, by the way, was before I was born. So, I mean, it was a way for artists to actually bring home a little money in return for their calling.
And upward mobility.
What?
And upward mobility.
Well, yeah, I've just been looking at three pieces of furniture that I inherited.
Mm-hmm.
That they bought because they could afford to buy them because my father could sell paintings to the government. And it was, I don't know what to say. I can go out of my house here, and I can go up to the marvelous town of Crockett, which is where CNH Sugar is headquartered. It's an old, gritty kind of place. It sort of looks like Western Pennsylvania steel country. And in the sidewalks are embedded legends that read WPA with a date. So those sidewalks were all made with WPA money.
Right.
And down a few blocks away from me is what had been a community park. Now it's part of a regional park. And it's got these incredible constructions made of stone, lampposts made of stones, and bridges made of stones. Lots and lots of stonework. And that was done
lots
by
of art
out of
deco.
Work Italians. What's that?
Lots of art deco.
Yeah, this was done by out-of-work Italian stonemasons.
Exactly.
And near you, was Hawk's Nest built by WPA?
Sure was. I was about to bring that
That's
up.
That's it.
The entire state park system, in large part, or the genesis of the state park system in the state of West Virginia, is all WPA work. And my grandfather worked on building them because.
Cool. I have a concern about this right now. You know, I've been thinking, God damn it, we got to bring back manufacturing to this country. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I could travel down your way from New York by way of the Pennsylvania Railroad, and I could just look at industry all around me as I passed through Trenton and Philadelphia. You know, I mean, the industry was just incredible. All that's gone. Hershey Chocolate pulled out of California. They had a big factory in the Central Valley, then put the whole factory in Mexico. You know, I don't want to dwell on that. My concern is how do we bring back all the jobs? And then I'm realizing that because of automated manufacturing, I don't think there's going to be so many blue-collar jobs to come back to.
Well, I mean, the work is being done. You know, somebody was telling me the other day that, for instance, Cooper Tire is the only tire that is still made in the United States.
Yes. They're independent, aren't they?
I don't know if some hedge fund owns them. And see, that's another part of the problem. You know, you find out that, you know, a hedge fund owns this or a hedge fund owns that.
I don't know if
manufacturing is coming back to the United States, Richard, for one simple reason. The reason they are everybody says, oh, NAFTA, SHAFTA, BAFTA, you know, there's a lot of talk about the TPP, which is an odious, filthy, rotten, heartbreaking, human-eating mess, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, that is not the be-all and end-all of why industry left here. And I have to, you know, I just because I live in reality world, we have to recognize a little bit of this. It became easier for manufacturers to go and speak plainly. It became simpler and cheaper for manufacturers to go somewhere and poison different people. Okay, I mean, remember the flu outbreak of a few years ago? Pretty much looked like it centered on one of those vast filth lagoons that Smithfield Meats had at its pork processing facility in Mexico.
Yep.
And they can even get away with some of that here. But a lot of the really, you know, all that industry that you saw traveling by rail, Richard, was contributing to an America that was an absolute toxic mess by 1970.
That's true. That's true. You know, I can't argue with that. Gee, Bob, I've been meaning to say, you know, a few years ago I called up and I said, wow, I found an American product. You know, these great can openers, Swing Away.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
China.
Yep. They got bought, I think they got bought by an investment group, and they say China on them now. So
I'm trying to think. Oh, you know, I know what I was looking at. Ferg and I just went for a wander yesterday because it was his birthday. And, you know, I don't ever have to worry about having cold feet in the studio again. Thank you very much, Duncan.
You're welcome.
But I can't take my foot warmer out with me to do one of the things that I really love to do, which is walk in the snow. I mean, I love to go for a hike in the snow, but being able to hike in the snow is predicated on being able to have warm, dry feet. So I'm on this. I've been looking for a long time. Haven't bought. You know, a lot of it's just window shopping. But I was looking at boots yesterday. And so I picked up a pair of boots by the Georgia Boot Company. You know the answer, right?
I do.
Yeah, the Georgia, the boots by the Georgia Boot Company are made in China. So are Irish Setter by Red Wing, made in China.
Irish Setter?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You know, but
Red
you know,
Wing for, already has a Chinese brand.
For the you know for people who have the wherewithal to do it, you know you can find a way. I mean, you can find your way out of this. I learned a long time back about a magnificent boot manufacturer up in Berlin, Wisconsin. All the good things are in Wisconsin now, by the way.
No, not always.
The Russell Moccasin Company has been in business for like 108 years, and you have to take 16 measurements of your foot because they build the boot to your foot.
Well, that's great.
The problem is, it rolls in at about $600 a pair.
Oh my God!
But you know what? That's not, as far as I can tell, and I researched pretty hard. That's not going to Warren Buffett. That's going to pay master craftspeople who really know how to make a damn boot.
Well, Bob, is there an in-between from these people?
No. Well, I mean, there's and I object to the name, there's Chippewa boots that are made in the U.S., at least some of them.
Yeah. Some Red Wing are made here.
Some Red Wings are made here. But you gotta go looking for a needle in a needle stack to find them.
I know. I went out to get thermal underwear a few days ago, and I went into a sporting goods store, and it's been hard to find. We've had a hell of a cold snap here, and so I picked up a package of Endera long johns, and it says on the front, "Designed and knit in the USA," and there's an American flag on it. Well, guess what? On the back, it says "Assembled in Mexico." So the automated work was done here.
Yeah,
the fabric was, yeah.
Or made in somewhere of somewhere else's component parts, and occasionally you'll see the word United States in a phrase like that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But Isaac just told me that Firestone tires are still made in the U.S. Maybe the distinction is that Firestone is now owned by the Chinese, or
well,
something
I
like
say
that.
Say something about Cooper. This is fairly interesting because I researched some tires a long time ago and discovered that for whatever reason Cooper is not involved, it's not part of the tire conglomerates. They were being sold by an auto parts chain in these parts, and from what I remember, they're good tires.
The ones I looked at had like a 60,000 mile tread wear warranty. Of course, you'll never get that in West Virginia because the road, you know, it's West Virginia.
Well, it's trade off. I was talking with a tire, a woman at a tire distributor one day in my search, and she made a very interesting statement. She said, tires are always trade-offs. You've got traction, you've got handling, and you've got tread wear.
Right.
And, you know, and it's a, if you get better at one, you get worse at another.
Right. Tread wear is going to go down when traction and handling go up, because those are sticky rubbers.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so,
yeah, I mean, it's like the difference. It's like the difference between tire ratings, whether it's you know, speed ratings. There's H, there's T, there's, you know, and then for your Corvette or whatever, there's a Z-rated tire, and that thing's practically, you know, the tires for those things are practically made of old gum erasers, and they're just done in 15,000 miles, because if you've got that car, you, by God, better be able to buy that tire.
Well, maybe a horn listener could tell me. me. What kind of good made in USA can opener I can buy? Because I would like one. You know, just the old crank, you know, thing where you turn the crank on the side. That's what I want. And my Chinese can opener's wearing out.
Well, it was meant to. But I mean, but do you see my larger point, Richard, about why American industry left? Because the nature of industry is such that it is pollutive. And you mix in the fact that they'll go anywhere for a buck. I mean, that town that I was talking about, talking to Jim about, you know, where my parents moved in 1960, was booming. And it was booming because the Tennessee Valley Authority had the cheapest electricity in the United States because it was hydroelectric.
Ah, yeah.
And then, because they got cute and decided they wanted to build them some of them newfangled nuclear reactors, well, the price of electricity went way the hell up, and industry went way the hell away, and left in many places a toxic mess.
Been meaning to ask you, why did your parents move to Alabama in the first place?
Because my father got a better job running a silicon furnace.
I see.
He worked, I mean, you know, you can drive down US 60 now and you can still see, I mean, alloy is still there and it's still making silicon. But it is a shadow of its former self. But we got to get out of here. It's been a delightful conversation. And we'll be back at it on Monday and the great big Skype-a-palooza on Tuesday evening. Everybody on board?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks very much. And, hey, Sal, thank you very much for being there helping so much. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
Much appreciated. Sal, you were the only help we had this evening. And,
oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, me too, but you know what? Just having you there means an awful, awful lot. So, I will bid you all a good night and a good weekend, and, back on Monday. All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, Bob.
Bye.
Good night.
So, what a wonderful treat tonight. Well, all the Friday on the front porches are treats. Very much enjoyable. And no, it wasn't kidding. Sal was the only help we had this evening. If you'd like to help, you're more than welcome to, and it is always much appreciated. We'll begin Monday in a hole and try to dig ourselves out before the end of the year. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. First and foremost, you with your kind contributions as well as your ideas, and as you can hear from Friday on the Front Porch, your conversation, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts. Thank you. Thank you sincerely. It's what makes this community and makes these conversations so special. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. And thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHACT.org, ACHEACT.org. The ACHACT is how we are going to end the horror, the abject, miserable horror that is mountaintop removal in Appalachia. ACHACT.org. We cannot do it without you. It is a grassroots endeavor. It is going to take you and your friends and the people you tell about it to get it done. ACHACT.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.